The border is huge. I don't think people understand the length of what we're talking about sometimes. Like 1,200 miles is insane. It's like you can be, I try to explain to people, that's like, talking about like North Carolina and Boston, like the same conversation.
It's essentially been since the Reagan administration that we've had any meaningful immigration policy through new legislation. It's long overdue. Whether we'll get it, I don't know.
The border's been in the news this week with the back and forth over SB4, but it's not the first time that the U.S.-Mexico border has been in the news in recent months. On top of that, President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump made separate trips to the border on the same day in late February, and Governor Greg Abbott has unilaterally taken action along the border without federal collaboration. I'm Chris Blake, and that last part is the primary focus of this week's episode. From deploying the Texas National Guard to putting physical barriers along the border, Texas wants to know, what's the responsibility of the state and what falls to the federal government? So you were in Brownsville for the president's visit. What was the scene like there?
That one was really particularly interesting because it was in Brownsville, which is, at the tip of the Rio Grande Valley. And that's a part of the border that is very different from what we've seen in other sections.
That's Jeremy Wallace. He's a political reporter for the Houston Chronicle and San Antonio Express News.
You probably hear a lot about Eagle Pass right now and about the surge that happened there with Operation Lone Star. That's where most of that is taking place. But something different has happened in the Rio Grande Valley that it's been really worth kind of paying attention to. For most of, last 20 years, I've watched the Rio Grande Valley be the number one place for most crossings. That's why you saw President Trump when he was in office. Most of the border wall construction, he focused on the Rio Grande Valley because that had been historically the place where the most crossings happened. We've seen a shifting of the pattern where a lot of the cartels started directing people to other parts of the border that are harder to get to, quite honestly. But that's why they started going to Eagle Pass and Del Rio sectors and places like that. And so the numbers in the Rio Grande Valley have plummeted. In fact, when Joe Biden was there, I kind of was thinking he was there primarily because that section of the Rio Grande Valley has seen the lowest amount of crossings at any time during his presidency. And so you see there in that section, it's like there's just not as many people coming across. So it looks a little bit more like a success story of the policies that Joe Biden has put into place.
According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the Del Rio sector has seen significantly more border crossings since October than any other in Texas. Nearly 169,000 migrants attempted to cross there, compared to about 98,000 in the El Paso sector and 76,000 in the Rio Grande Valley. The busiest sector in the U.S. was in Tucson, Arizona, with more than 250,000 attempted crossings.
Eagle Pass is a small town. We're talking, 30,000 people in the entire county, really, in that area. And they just don't have the resources to deal with the influx that a place like Brownsville would, because Brownsville is a big city. It's like, it's a metro area. And so there's a lot of resources in those areas that can handle people coming across the border.
Eagle Pass is in Maverick County, which has a population of just over 58,000 people. The city of Brownsville itself has 188,000, while Cameron County has 423,000.
That's why Trump, when he came to Texas, he went to Eagle Pass, where more of that chaos continues. Even though the numbers have dropped there considerably, they're having a resource strain, that is unlike any place on the border because they're not used to this. They don't have the system set up to handle 30,000 people showing up in the Rio Grande, right there. But they do in the valley. In the valley, they can handle that. They have the resources. They have the social service organizations, the non-governmental entities, the NGOs are really active in that part of the border compared to Eagle Pass, which really just doesn't have as many of those facilities kind of set up for it.
If we go back to those concurring border visits by Biden and Trump, it appeared Congress was close to striking a deal on immigration in early February, a bipartisan effort that lawmakers had worked on for months.
We had a Senate bill that didn't get out of the Senate. There was belief that it was going to get out of the Senate and then have to sort of work its way in the House. It didn't get out of the Senate. The House has talked about passing something out of the House, hasn't really done anything yet. So there's really no activity at the congressional level. My name is Brian Owsley. I'm an associate professor at UNT Dallas College of Law.
And I know your resume includes being a former magistrate judge in the Southern District of Texas, which makes you uniquely qualified for this topic.
Yes, yes. In a prior life, I served as a magistrate judge down in okay. Corpus, and we had a fair amount of criminal law regarding immigration matters.
What really is the responsibility of the state when it comes to the border, and what's the responsibility of the federal government as far as security goes?
I think, sort of to put it in reverse, the primary responsibility for control of the borders and including along the Rio Grande is the federal government. And that would stem in part from, you know, constitutional powers regarding naturalization and the like. So that is a federal power. It's not that the state of Texas doesn't have any sort of authority to sort of man its territory, including right at the water's edge. It's just that the primacy falls to the federal government. And currently there's a tension, I guess, between the state of Texas and the federal government as to how it's supposed to be done. And that's, I think, in large part, sort of the best way to characterize the dispute overall.
And what about from a cost standpoint? Is that kind of how it breaks out as well? The federal government will bear most of that financial responsibility?
I would say generally, yes. I mean, so, you know, there's state budgets, federal budgets, and the like. And one of the things we hear right now, I think from both sides, is that there's not enough money, there's not enough resources devoted to the border in Texas or the border, you know, with Mexico across the South, you know, whether it's California, Arizona, or New Mexico.
Last summer, Texas started to put physical barriers up along the border, buoys in the Rio Grande, and razor wire along the shoreline. But the state was ultimately ordered to remove it. The Supreme Court let Border Patrol agents go in and cut the razor wire that Texas had put up along the border. What was the back and forth leading up to that ruling?
At some point, the Biden administration sued over this razor wire and some of the other impediments, for example, the obstructions in the waterway itself. The trial judge ruled in favor of the federal government. The state of Texas appealed to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, the federal appellate court. They reversed the trial judge and ruled in favor of the state of Texas. Then the Biden administration, the federal government, filed essentially an emergency appeal with the United States Supreme Court. And it was that decision that you referenced, 5-4 in favor of the federal government, that authorized Border Patrol to essentially remove these obstacles, including the razor wire.
One of the other things Abbott has done in the name of border security is to deploy the Texas National Guard to the state's southern border. Operation Lone Star launched in March 2021 and has been ongoing for 3 years. What is the Texas National Guard doing in this border deployment that has lasted for a couple of years now?
Well, I mean, I think a good question with really not a great, you know, a great answer, in the sense of, if you listen to, for example, Governor Abbott or Attorney General Paxton, I mean, they're complaining about the sort of large scale numbers of people who are entering the United States through, I guess, channels that are not for immigration. In other words, they're crossing the river instead of going at a port of entry. So to the extent that that's been going on for a couple of years at a rate that Texas officials think is too high and not controlled, it would appear then having all those troops down on the border, having additional law enforcement officers on the border, hasn't stemmed the tide. So, you know, I think going back to your question, what has it done? Just to take the governor at his word, seemingly not much.
During the Trump administration, construction was started on a border wall. When Joe Biden won the election in 2020, Governor Abbott took it upon himself to, you know, try to crowdfund this border wall. I guess, first of all, can a state crowdfund a barrier between the U.S. and another country? And what's the latest on that?
So I think that a state can crowdfund for a barrier. However, I don't think a state, even regardless of whether it's crowdfunded sources of revenue or taxpayer revenue, is allowed to erect a barrier on a national border, right? And this goes back to the discussion we were having a little while ago. The primary role for control of the nation's borders is based on the federal government's authority, not the state's.
Despite these efforts, border crossings are just about flat year over year, down 1.4%.
Part of the problem is, no matter what happens, if people in other countries are living in a situation where they are better off trying to get into the United States so that they can work and send money back home for their families, many of them are going to attempt that no matter what.
You mentioned the changing in the migration patterns from the border further north and west along the river. What has led to that change?
Yeah, a big part of this is, you know, I keep coming back to Venezuela. I started to see in the numbers about 3 years ago, I actually had Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary, in San Antonio, and I pulled him aside, and I literally had spreadsheets in front of me, you know, showing them, like, look, you know, the numbers of Venezuelans coming through the Del Rio sector, which includes Eagle Pass, was going through the roof. It's like there were stretches, you know, when I was younger in Texas, where you might get, you know, 200 Venezuelans the whole year coming across the border. But what's happened as Venezuela's economy has collapsed and its government has become, you know, socialist, you know, and just rampant with all kinds of problems, right? It's led to this influx or an exodus of people out of Venezuela into all other parts of the South America and Central America, and of course to the U.S.
Wallace says the reason people are trying to get into the U.S. has as much to do with what's happening in other countries as it does with our own border policies.
So what we've seen is like a diversity of who's coming through the border. So you got Venezuelans, Cubans, Haitians, those three countries particularly, we've seen a surge that's unlike what we used to see. And so it's part of a global migration, you know, issue that really kind of, you know, speaks to, we always like to think America first, we're our own country, but the importance of things like what's happening in Venezuela and why, like, even in the Haitian surge that we got was because of policies that Chile imposed on their population.
This might be a little bit of a tricky question, but do you think that nuance is explained enough in coverage of the border? Or in a lot of cases, is that just so much detail that it's hard to fit in all of that narrative into what's leading to the influx?
Yeah, you know, you've just nailed it right there. Like, as humans, we always like simple answers to complex problems, right? So just like, hey, the Mexicans are coming across the border. You heard it from former President Trump all the time. You know, it's like you always talk about the Mexicans sending their worst over the border. You know, it's like, that's the simple answer. The complex answer, I think, is what gets lost in it. You know, the complex answer is like, oh, wait, this is a Venezuela problem that is rooted in an authoritarian government that took a country that was once one of the kind of the shining stars of South America and now has turned into maybe the biggest hellhole because of their policies.
How does what you see when you make trips to different border communities compare to what is portrayed nationally?
That's a really good question because, you know, people make it look like these are outposts in the middle of nowhere, right? You know, it's like, and what kind of gets lost in it is like the human component and the community impact. You know, Eagle Pass, like, you know, you'll see a lot of the video of the military buildup right on, you know, the river there. But if you just literally turn around, look behind you, it's just a regular city, you know, with people going shopping, you know, picking up groceries, and like, you're really right there, right on top of it. And I think that part of it kind of gets lost in it, and where it's like, it's not just that, you know, there's a, you know, there's definitely a surge of people coming across, but the impact on the communities, I think, gets lost.
After the break, we'll learn about the legality of one final step Texas has taken when it comes to immigration, busing migrants out of state. This week on Texas Wants to Know, we're breaking down what the responsibilities are of the state of Texas and the federal government when it comes to border security. We've covered razor wire, buoys, and a crowdfunded border wall, but what about Texas's practice of putting immigrants on a bus and sending them to Democratic-leaning cities?
So I think that's a little bit of a different question, right? So what we were talking about previously in terms of erecting barriers, either, you know, in the water or with razor wire or with some kind of wall, that impinges upon federal authority based on the Constitution.
Does the state have the authority to do that? And what kind of are the legal implications of that, you know, if those cities wanted to push back?
Now, in terms of busing, this busing, we've seen that from Governor Abbott. I think we've seen it from others, maybe in Arizona and the like. We've seen Governor DeSantis of Florida. You know, he may have been paying for buses, but, you know, he was also paying for airplanes, right, with Florida taxpayer dollars. And we've even seen Mayor Adams up in New York City busing people who've been sent to New York City to other areas within the state of New York. And I think that there's at least a plausible argument that all of that sort of transporting of folks violates federal law.
How so?
There's also a federal statute concerning basically what's characterized as harboring or smuggling undocumented individuals, right? And so, you know, that federal statute, among other things, and it's a, you know, pretty lengthy statute, but it criminalizes anyone who knowingly or recklessly disregards the fact that an individual, a foreign national, has come and entered the United States illegally, that they then transport or move or attempt to transport or move those individuals within the United States. So I think there's an argument that when Governor Abbott puts people on buses and sends them to Denver or Chicago or to New York or DC or wherever, that that is a violation of federal law.
I think that just about does it. The very complicated subject.
It's not going to get any simpler anytime soon.
I'm Chris Blake at News Radio 1080 KRLD in Dallas-Fort Worth. Thanks for joining me for Texas Wants to Know. If you like the show, please give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Next week, Bree Flores will have part two of our look at immigration, this time from an economic perspective and what it's costing Texas taxpayers. I wrote and produced this episode with audio editing by Bree, editorial support from Cooper Mall, and original music by Michael Eisenstein. Odyssey's managing producer for National News Podcasts is Myron Kaplan.